Welcome to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood with your host, Angela Jones. Presented by Brighter Day Law, listen to the stories of the people who make Colorado Springs a great place to live and make our world better every day. We want to give back to those who give so much to us.
Good morning, Colorado Springs. It's another brighter day in the neighborhood. I'm your host, Angela Jones, here with a very good friend of mine, Melissa Bannero. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you're able to join us.
I'm so glad, too.
So we were just chatting, and Melissa and I go back a little ways.
Yeah,
we had a close mutual friend, actually, that passed away about a year ago, but we've known each other for a while. Melissa is a counselor and consultant by trade. She founded Bannero Counseling and Consulting. Is that right?
That's right.
All right. So like we were talking, this is really about introducing our friends to the Colorado Springs neighborhood, or in the neighborhood to the Colorado Springs community. And so I wanted to give you an opportunity to let our listeners get to know you a little bit more and why you do what you do.
Sounds great. I think this is an amazing opportunity to just, and I don't want to say I'm jealous, but I think this is an awesome thing that you're getting to do by getting to meet people in the community and just be with them.
Yeah, I think so too. In fact, that was sort of the idea behind it is for me, that was like, you know, when I had the opportunity to come and join KPPF and do something, it was sort of suggested that, oh, you could do something about law or, you know, divorces or whatever. And, you know, I kind of selfishly, I was like, you know what I really want to do? I want to meet with like-minded professionals, you know, people who are helping professionals. And some, you know, people don't traditionally think of as a helping professional. Like, of course, you know, with counseling, they would. But I mean, we've met with photographers and hairdressers. And I think a week or so ago, we met with a guy who started a brewery.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, but the why behind it is what is what really counts.
Well, those are all people in the community.
Absolutely. So tell our viewers a little bit about you.
Well, okay. Well, I jokingly say my spirit animal is Lucille Ball.
Okay.
Because I am not a perfectionist. I think that idea of being able to just be myself kind of helps. But yeah, okay. I'm a mom of four kids. I've been married for 28 years. I'm originally from Houston. By way of Michigan. I can tell you all sorts of stuff. I love yoga.
Well, what brought you to Colorado Springs?
My husband's job.
Okay.
He buys and sells power on the hour ahead market for our utility.
Okay. Does he work for Colorado Springs Utilities?
He does, yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Was he in Houston?
He was at a company called Dynegy that still exists.
Okay.
But after everything that happened with Enron, it didn't, it was kind of like, it's dicey. So when he found a job here, we were like, why wouldn't you come to Colorado? Like,
why would you want to stay in Houston when you could be in Colorado Springs?
Exactly.
No offense, anyone from Houston.
No, I love the food and I love the people, but yeah.
Yeah, but the hurricanes.
And the roaches and
fire ants. I'm from Florida, so
yeah, no.
I come by that opinion, honestly.
Yeah, you do.
And stuff. So what about, you know, the counseling profession drew you in?
So my dad died when I was two.
Mm.
And I think really early on, I started to realize, like, I had a best friend who wanted to spend the night one night. And I was so excited. I'm an only child. And she started crying in the middle of our slumber party and had to go home. And it was because her parents were divorced. And my little 5-6-year-old was like, I don't get it. You can call him. You can talk to him. But like, as I grew and felt into, well, emotion is something we all feel. And it's not like we get to weigh someone's pain or weigh the experience. And I started to really learn pretty young how finding myself and finding others in terms of grounding and my sense of who my, like, God and everything.
Right.
And so it just seemed like ever since I can remember, that's what I wanted to do.
It's like ever since you were little.
Yeah, I'm lucky.
Really, yeah. No, that's neat. Well, there's a couple of things that, you know, what you were describing is brought up for me. One is the grief aspect. And I think I'd like to come back to that because I was actually thinking when I learned that you were coming on with us, that I was like, oh, that would really be something to delve into. Because you and I have actually worked together professionally, meaning you were a counselor to me in a grief period. So there was that part. But also that whole aspect of what you just said, which I think is like, you can't really judge other people's emotions.
No.
And I read something this morning. I read every morning as part of my morning routine. And I was, you know, reading through something and went and checked sort of my social media jazz. And someone had put on social media, oh, you think you're worried about this thing that's happening in your life or that thing that's happening in your business. And well, I got this, you know, text from a friend of mine yesterday where her child was, you know, in the middle of sort of a school shooting or at least a school shooting incident, like scare. And like, you don't have any real problems. This lady has real problems. Put it into context. And on the one hand, I understood that, like, guys, the things that you're dealing with every day are not life and death. You know, they're things that are just part and parcel of what we do, especially as business owners. But the other part of that, so I got that, and that was the point. But there was that part of me that was like, and I think probably from our work, kind of going, you know, the fact that your pain is worse than my pain doesn't mean I don't have any. Your stress may be more than my stress, but that doesn't mean mine doesn't count. So can you speak into that a little bit?
Absolutely. I mean, what you just described to me, it reminds me of a Brené Brown when she talked about daring greatly. There's these armors that we can put up. And it sounds very almost vulnerable to say this is what happened the other day. But at the very same time, it's like this push away. And that's not how we connect. I mean, we all have pain. And it's in our brokenness that when we lean in and go, oh, man, that's hard. It isn't about fixing it. It's about being seen. I think of like those beautiful, I don't know why I just thought about those Japanese pottery where they're cracked and we put the gold.
Right, right. Yeah, you know, yeah, yeah.
Instead of hiding the cracks.
Right.
Or we don't also want to go, oh my gosh, like my crack's bigger than yours. But like, oh, can I help you fill that crack? Can I, I don't know, how does it land for me to say that?
Right. No, I think that, I mean, I might say, hey, my gold's bigger than yours. But I mean, I've been called bougie more than once. So maybe that's just perspective. No, but I think it is real important, especially in the business context, that efficiency coaches or people who are trying to, you know, help you move to the next level. And I've been reading this book called Winning. I don't remember the author's name. I could definitely look it up, but wrote a book called Relentless as well. And that's part of my morning read. And I don't remember his first name, his first or last name at this juncture. But in any event, he, you know, he trained, you know, Kobe Bryant. He trained Michael Jordan. He did some other things like this. And he's talking about like just how their mindset was so competitive and they were almost punishing to people around there in that pursuit of winning. And there's a certain part of that I really get, you know, it's like to become your highest best self, you have to push yourself beyond your limits. You have to overcome your brain saying, this is too hard, you know, because our brain is wired to avoid, well, your emotions seem to be wired to help you wallow in pain, but your brain is wired, I think, to help you avoid physical pain for sure. And so sometimes it really is mind over matter. Like, I'm really not going to starve to death if I don't eat that brownie. You know what I mean? But on the flip side, where do we draw that line? Where compassion exists in that same space.
Well, and I honestly think it's interesting when we feel actual connectivity versus I'm a good basketball player. That example you're talking about, if I really know we're really in this together, my ability to cope with pain is actually stronger than if I'm trying to just like fake it till I make it. That sense of you with me actually helps me bear my pain in a much more coping manner.
Well, the story that I read through this morning was where there was like a new player and he, you know, had done like taken like five Red Bulls so that he'd come out really impressed Jordan on the court. And the guy ended up pushing himself so hard, he essentially like blacked out, had a heart attack, something. And so they were looking after him, trying to revive him. They eventually was revived. And, you know, he looked up, saw, you know, Michael Jordan looking down at him and Michael Jordan more or less said, hey, man, you okay? And the kid's like, oh, yeah, man, I'm straight, you know? And Michael's like, okay, well, get him off my court. I got a game to win. And I thought it was interesting that Michael did first attend to his teammate. Like, he didn't go, yes, get him off the court. He did attend to that part. But it was like, it was that drive that he knew or that greatness that he saw in Michael Jordan, you know, that really caused him, you know, notwithstanding even the, you know, medical emergency that he'd just been through, to kind of still want to you know, be on his game. So I think it's fascinating. I just, you know, do you work with people a lot that are sort of in that, have that tension?
You know, it's interesting. I work with a lot of people that they're just at that edge. Like they're feeling, but they keep just kind of staying at that edge. And the more they really feel into themselves and really are feeling more like they can feel seen by me and then someone else, because even feeling really seen at first is kind of scary. All of a sudden they are able to take something like that. And almost it's like, I think of that. I mean, how many kids didn't grow up somehow feeling like they knew him? And there's a sense of that knowing that make it, it's that knowing it, it's, there is a respect and there is, oh my gosh, he's amazing. But there's also that, just that sense of knowing someone. And the more we know ourselves, and that's where I'm able to help people kind of move away from that sense of, one of my clients, I was asking her what she thought at her closing session. And she's like, I felt like I was in the back of a cave. And I was like, wait, it's like, she was saying to me, I was way on the outside. And she's like, now it's like, we're sitting in the cave together. And there's like this warm fire. And even when I'm not with her, she feels like she can be with herself and she can be with others in such a different way that it helps her to get to that next level of all sorts of things. That sometimes it's like, instead of having to just like spitball it,
right,
there's a sense of, I got this, even if I fall, because life isn't all about getting it perfect.
Right, right. Well, and it kind of reminds me of like, and I don't know if it's, I'll use these terms and see what you think about it. This tension between being a human being and a human doing.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it's so, I don't know. I feel like even there's a sense sometimes, even for therapists, where I even worked with a therapist, as soon as I started to feel a good feeling, okay, what do you want to work on now? That's doing. And I'm like, no, I need you to be with me, even in this good feeling. And when we can be in even, and it's wild. I've learned so much now about the nervous system. Like we talk about the fight flight and we talk about that rest and digest. Well, there's this middle place that when we're able to move in and out of them, so I can be more in that being because I spend time in the morning meditating. And then when I want to do and be playful, which comes through core emotion, like I can't be creative and playful unless I've moved through emotion instead of just sat in anxiety.
Right.
But all of a sudden, I have that edge of being able to be in that little sympathetic, but still in that ventral vagal. And it's so much more rich than just going through the motions.
Got you. And do you think, so is this sort of that tension hardwired in us then?
You know, I really don't. I think what's hardwired in us is fight flight. I think that growing up, most of our parents had no clue how, when we fell, to be like, oh yeah, instead of shake it off. So we don't have that sense of being able to feel that edgy, courageous. I mean, it's almost terrifying for clients sometimes when they come in, they start to ride a wave of emotion and they have to, I'm like, okay, can you feel me with you? And we go to this other side and it's like, wow. And so being able to go from really having a real kind of wimpy parasympathetic nervous system to one that's really vital, that's where all of a sudden, and that's what, if you look at anything nowadays with the research they're talking about, most of us are stuck in that sympathetic place. And that's where anxiety, insomnia, all even depression land, because we haven't been able to grow and develop this other system. It wasn't safe. People would basically shut us down as kids in schools, at home.
You're listening to A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood with Angela Jones and our special guest, Melissa Bannerow on KPPF. Talk to me more about this parasympathetic nervous system under development that you, because what I think I'm hearing from you is it's almost cultural or generational underdevelopment.
I would say culturally and generationally, but it's an actual physical thing. I can't think my parasympathetic nervous system into being. I have to actually do things to tone it, to actually, like when you're in a room and you hear five soothing things, but one scary thing, someone whose nervous system's not toned, they're just going to go to that scary sound versus, oh, it's mainly safe, I'll be okay.
Okay.
But it is definitely something that our culture has. I mean, you know, you need to have, when you take care of kids, education, food, a roof. But emotional security, emotional awareness versus emotion phobia. I mean,
So I know that you've started to work in an area called accelerated experiential, is it experiential dynamic psychotherapy? AEDP.
Yes.
Tell me more about that.
So it's one of the most amazing therapies. We actually have watched people, like when we supervise each other, we watch tape. Certain clients are okay with us taping. So we've been able to actually watch states 1, 2, 3, and 4 in emotion. When I was an EMDR therapist, I could help you move through an emotion because of a trauma. But I didn't, I mean, I remember even trainers saying, well, we don't really understand emotion. No, we really now can understand emotion.
Okay.
And so AEDP has been able to help me track a client like moment to moment. So if all of a sudden if I say something as a therapist, I get to now say, so how did that land? So in any given moment, it's not like I've talked to someone who said, you know, and she's a therapist. I don't really feel like I'm doing that work I used to do with my therapist. I don't feel like I'm doing the trauma work. I'm like, well, have you told her? Well, no. But it's like those conversations feel scary until we create that space.
Right.
And when I say, Lily, you know, I just ask that, is that, how does it land? And I will share stuff about myself, but then I say, so how did it feel that I shared that about myself? So there's that space, like, I don't want to know anything about you versus, well, how does it feel to know your event, your life impacts me and I do feel sad.
Right, right. I will tell you, sometimes it felt weird.
It does, yeah. And that's where,
it did. It's an odd space to be in, I think, because especially in places of pain, we often feel also very alone.
Right. And that's where what I love about this is that in places of pain, we've often fell into what feels like emotion, but it's actually not. It's a sense of like anxiety or unbearable aloneness and shame. And I never want to help a friend or a client grow that. When we grow an emotion, it's sadness, it's joy, it's anger. When we ride those waves, we end up in this place of creativity and courage. But if all of a sudden it feels scary because the last or the big times when you felt that, someone shamed you or was like, what's wrong with you? We can't necessarily get there right away. And that's why I have to track real, like, oh, I'm seeing you feel sad, or like I'll literally say, oh, look, I feel like something just came over your face. What's going on? And if, oh my gosh, it feels like you're watching me. Well, we're not going to go any further.
Right.
And also, does it feel like I'm with you or I'm just sitting over here watching you? Because if it feels like I'm just watching you, we're not going there. We have to co-regulate, not you just sit there, feel it alone.
And so what caused you to, for you, that it became important for you to transition from the EMDR to doing the AEDP?
I think what, it's kind of funny, like I don't know if I'm going to offend therapists, but I really think in general, most of us therapists came into therapy actually not to help people feel emotion, but to avoid it, strategize. Huh. And I loved AEDP because it makes me as a therapist actually process and be with my emotions as well as help you more, feel more comfortable with yours. I literally remember the first training, we were practicing it, and this woman who's my client, she's just another therapist. She's like, oh my gosh, I've only known you for about 5 minutes. And I feel like you know me better than my friends. Mm. And it's not because of data. It was because when the question was, what will keep you from doing AEDP when you go home? Mm-hmm. And she said, I can feel in my core, this is important work and this is true and it's real. And also on my extremities, I'm feeling terror almost. Like my family said, don't rock the boat. And being in a room with someone and helping them feel an emotion is against all the rules of my family.
Of your family now?
Most therapists' families.
Oh, most therapists.
Like, we become therapists because we know how not to rock the boat in a family.
Oh, really?
In our home, most of our families of origin. Like, that's...
Yeah.
And so to be able to, like, in a client's space, be like, ooh, can we be with that?
Right, or how to... And so the model that you came from, and I won't say the model that's out there, but just the model that you came from was more, all right, you're having basically your emotions, which come from your thoughts or beliefs, you know, are creating problems in your life. Almost like you have emotional disorder, like your emotions are creating disorder. So let's come up with strategies so that you can manage your emotions so that they don't interfere with your life functions, which in general, like your ability to succeed or go to work or, you know, just not rock the boat, that type of a thing.
Right. And so instead, now we understand those probably weren't the emotions. Those are those unbearable aloneness, those, that sense of just being stuck in anxiety and a tangle of emotions versus core state, which is very healing and helps us actually become better at everything that we can do.
You've heard of the concept of flow?
Yes.
Yes. So how does flow, you know, factor into this if it does at all?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Like when my clients are literally riding waves of emotion, like we're able to kind of get out of the story, feel, and they're in that state 3, almost state 4. If you could, heart math actually measures flow. I don't know if you've ever heard of heart math.
Yeah.
So that's what they're measuring. And it's amazing. They are totally in flow. Literally, when we literally ride waves of emotion, that's it.
Well, describe for our listeners a little bit more what flow is.
So flow, it's those words I kept talking about a minute ago, creativity, courageousness, compassion, curiosity, all of those. that's when we're in flow. I mean, like, if I'm not in curiosity, then I know I'm not really in my essence. And that's, as a therapist, mm-hmm. that's, I don't have it for you. You have it for you. And I, my mm-hmm. job is just to help you get there.
Right.
And the flow is what's going to take you to this new place of believing who you are. That's so much more empowering than the shame and anxiety that you might have felt every time you hit something before.
Gotcha. Well, and the way that at least professionals, a lot of times, you know, try to get into flow state, it has to do with, you know, properly hydrating, sleeping well, you know, doing meditating. But the idea is that when we get into a flow state, like, we become more ourselves, mm-hmm. That we clear out a lot of this, like you said, this extraneous noise, the self-consciousness, the kind, you know, defense mechanisms
that
all the little parts that
pretend to be the one, like the guy with all mm-hmm. the Red Bull, that's not flow.
No.
those other parts.
You know, yeah, but athletic performance that leads to a heart attack, I really wouldn't think it's flow.
Right.
But it's in those spaces that our productivity shoots through the roof. Like, you can get more done, mm-hmm. like, you know, exponentially more done when you're in a flow state.
Oh, absolutely.
Not. You know, and we get, it's sort of like this, you know, tyranny of the urgent. Mm-hmm. You know, like, we get busy, and, you know, we're just trying to make it through, and even emotionally. And that's kind of where I'm thinking where these may tie together is a lot of times we're so busy coping. We're so busy just trying to deal with, like you said, emotion management mm-hmm. rather than getting in, feeling what we feel.
And just being with it.
And just going, okay, this is, you know, without judgment, mm-hmm. but it's tough.
It's tough. And part of it is we are meant to co-regulate. If I'm feeling an emotion and you're in the room with me, and you don't have to be my therapist, you can just mm-hmm. be a friend. Mm-hmm. Together, we have this ability, our nervous systems link, and we can handle so much more emotion than if I'm all alone.
Okay. So tell me, I mean, if you can describe sort of what that looks like co-regulation, what does that look like in practical terms?
So in practical terms, the best example is when you look at a mother and baby. There's some really cool now research that they literally will track a mom and baby and go so slow that if you're watching it at first, you think mom's literally just baby shows something, mom looks over there, baby smiles, mom coos. Now they've slowed it down so much that every once in a while, mom reacts before baby even does things. Mm. And it's a dance. It's this beautiful dance. And when we're in the rhythm, kind of like you and I are right now, it's this back and forth, and we're full warm in our body, and we're able to, like, even finish each other's sentences. But it's like, oh, you interrupted me. It's not there because we're dancing.
Right. Yeah. And that's interesting too, because at least I, for one, because I'm a quick thinker, I tend to, like, with my friends, roll over each other in conversation, and it doesn't feel like interrupting. Yeah. But there's other times when, even if I'm trying to agree with someone, it feels to them like interrupting or vice versa. And that's like that clue that you aren't linked.
And to just name it. Ooh, yeah, I'm sorry. It probably felt like I just stepped on your toe.
Right.
And that's the cool thing. What I'm learning now in therapy is that when I mess up, step on your toe like that, mm-hmm. we call it a rupture.
Okay.
And I was in the midst of a training once, and someone's like, so what if I try this with my client and it creates a rupture? And the trainer's like, that's awesome. You want to, because the best thing in any relationship is the repair. Huh. If there's never a rupture, there's no repair. And when I mess up and I own it to you and go, oh man, Angela, I screwed up. That sense of trust and that sense of flow is even more immense the next time we do something.
Right.
Because there was an opportunity for repair.
Huh. That's interesting, because the other day, and it was completely unintentional, I hurt the feelings of one of my staff members. And, you know, I was actually joking around, and I was like, girl, blah, 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 blah. And she was like, the next day she was like tearful, and I'm like, what's going on? And you're like, you were yelling at me yesterday. And I was just like, one, I was shocked that that's how it landed with her, because mm-hmm. I didn't mean it that way. But I think just because of the work that I've done with you, and, you know, just also having enough life experience, mm-hmm. you know, rather than needing to tend to how I felt, mm-hmm. I was able to kind of meet, oh my goodness, wow, you're feeling hurt. And, you mm-hmm. know, I can see that, you know, stressed you out, and that, believe me, that wasn't my intention. And I'm very, mm-hmm. you know, I was sorry. I never want to cause hurt and cause distress, especially because, you know, I know that you know, she's very, very much a friend mm-hmm. to me, meaning she's for me. You know what yeah, I mean?
Absolutely.
And she's devoted herself to helping me succeed. And so we were able to, you know, kind of repair that. But I discussed it with my whole team. And then after the fact, you know, I got a little choked up. I got like overwhelmed with the emotion because I didn't, in that moment with her, I didn't really feel that, you know, the mm-hmm. emotion that went with having hurt somebody, because I was trying to tend to her.
Yeah.
But at the time when I was sort of describing it, I felt it myself. And it was, you know, and then I was like, oh, did I screw up as a leader? Should I be getting kind of misty or tearful
not
in front
all.
Of my team? But again, there's that tension. There's that tension of leaders or people you admire are steely and they keep pushing forward. And I know even like female attorneys, a lot of times mm-hmm. it's almost like they adopt a harder edge
yeah.
to offset this idea that women are emotional, like that's a bad thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think even the fact that one, you could read her to notice, that means you already know her. You already have a little bit of mm-hmm. that going on. And on top of that, you've clearly created that sense of not just steely. If when you check in with her, she's real and she can tell yeah. you.
Well, I do have that personality though, still.
Well, that,
there's no getting away from that.
No, and that's that beautiful thing of when right. it's fun and it's big and we're playing.
Right.
And that's the thing. It doesn't matter if we didn't mean it to be
yeah.
able to make space and just.
Well, exactly. It's kind of in the way I conceptualize that is like, hey, I may not have meant to crash my car into you, and it doesn't mean your car wasn't damaged.
Right.
You know what I mean?
We own it. We
yeah.
move forward.
I mean, damage is damage.
Right.
Like you said, that rupture is the rupture.
Right.
You know, even if we didn't mean to cause it. And it's really great to know there's ways to repair that. Well, I can't even believe that we're almost at the end of our time together. I want to give you an opportunity to let our listeners know how they can get in touch with you.
Okay. I have a website. It's my name, which mm-hmm. I hope will be on the site since it's hard to spell, but it's MelissaBannerot.com.
Mm-hmm.
And they can find my number that way too, which everything's on the website.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us here today. It's been a real pleasure. I feel like I've gotten like the most, I've got my own little session.
Okay.
I think I'm going to sign up. I'm going to call you and we'll sit in for some ADEP together.
Well, thank you.
So thank you for joining us for another Brighter Day in the Neighborhood. We're here every Sunday. And until the next time, have a brighter day.
This has been A Brighter Day in the Neighborhood, presented by Brighter Day Law. Heard every Sunday at 11 a.m. on KPPF, 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM. Listen to the companion podcast on Podbean. Brighter Day Law are an experienced and qualified team of divorce and family law attorneys. Their aim is to help you get through that emotional and challenging time of divorce and other family disputes. The mission of Brighter Day Law is to compassionately help families resolve their disputes with personalized legal representation while keeping the best interest of the entire family at heart. Their attorneys handle all kinds of family law cases, including child custody, divorce, high asset divorce, mediation, and alimony. Brighter Day Law, compassionate counsel in dark and stressful times. 225-4493 or at brighterdaylaw.com.